You're listening to the Small Business Talk podcast with Kathy Smith.
Episode 45.
Small Business Talk is a podcast for business owners and entrepreneurs who want a better way to run their businesses without spending years doing it the hard way. Small Business Talk is hosted by Kathy Smith, who has run the same marketing agency for more than 17 years. And help hundreds of business owners achieve their marketing goals.
Today, our guest is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. And today we're going to be talking about making your marketing more human. Welcome, Jürgen.
Hi, Kathy. It's a privilege to be here.
Thank you for accepting my invitation. Okay, making your marketing more human. As we've seen in recent years, it's become very, very automated and everybody wants to do it as easily as possible and with as little contact as possible, which of course is a huge disconnect for our customers. So let's have a chat about how we can make it more human. What would our first steps be?
Well, I think you raise a really good point there about the automation and technology, which makes it easy to automate a whole range of different things. And what we need to remember, I think this is the first step, is that we need to remember that we actually do business with people. And even, you know, we hear these terms B2B and B2C and how they might be different. Well, in all cases, it's, you know, there's a relationship between two people, really. There's a seller and a buyer, or a person providing a solution to a problem that another person has. And that's really the personal connection. And that will be my first step, is really remember there's always a person at the other end of whatever transaction it is. And automation and technology should be there to make it easier to have more of those human-to-human interactions as opposed to replacing them.
Yes, I think that's very true. People think that they forget that there's somebody at the other end of this conversation, and we definitely do business with people and not just brand names, unless you're a major, huge brand. And they all started originally with people as well.
That's right. Yeah. And even today, you know, you can think of, and I was listening to an audio book this morning. They were talking about Zappos as one of the examples. Now, Zappos is an online shoe retailer, but a pretty big company, very successful. But their whole premise is based around treating people like people and offering service and making memorable experiences for people. And, you know, one of their famous things is that you can return the shoes anytime you like if they're a bad fit, or if you don't change your mind, you don't like them, you suddenly realize the color doesn't suit me or they're uncomfortable or whatever it might be.
And that, of course, breaks down that buyer resistance of they're no longer worried about making a purchase because they know that they can actually return them if there is an issue. Because, of course, we have major problems, especially with digital products. I know we're not talking about digital in this case, but people have the buyer's remorse. They pay a lot of money for a course or something like that, and they're worried if it's going to work or not. So breaking down that buyer resistance barrier has worked really well for the shoe company.
That's right. And, you know, you mentioned digital course. I mean, there's a really good example there with digital courses that I think is something that we can give our customers a much better experience. Instead of, like, the traditional way to sell a course is you sell the thing before you build it. So typically there would be, in that instance, a time lapse between the first people buying and paying money to when they actually get some of the course. And many people just leave that in a vacuum. So people spend money and then they have to wait until they get the return on whatever that investment is. Yet we could do so much in that time between delivering what they've purchased and when they've actually paid the money to make them feel comfortable, make them feel as though, hey, they belong to this new community. There's a human connection there. Once they get into the course, you know, building the expectations and the building habits and behaviors, if you like, that once they get into the course, they know this is what is going to happen during the course. This is how we're going to be treated.
And that's really important, because if you were doing a face-to-face in-person situation and they were buying something from you, you would be definitely stepping them through what's going to happen next. And yes, we're going to give you a free mini course in the meantime, or we're going to give you some checklists or some homework or something to do there, so that they would feel that they had actually paid money for something, even though it was going to be delivered in a slightly longer time frame. Because I think that is a huge issue, is you pay your money and it disappears into the cyberspace, and you never know whether that course is actually going to eventuate or not. And then that becomes a bit of a disconnect, and people start to get worried, and then that's when your refunds can be much higher than they should be normally.
And even where the person might be comfortable that, yes, that course will deliver on a particular day, but it's really about the experience that they have on the whole customer journey. So I like to talk a lot about, and many companies do this, they spend a lot more. I mean, the banks are in the news again now, hearing the other day where they were saying the banks spend huge amounts of money to get new customers, but they hardly spend anything on their existing customers. In fact, their existing customers in the home loan market are paying penalties. There is actually, I can't remember the exact term, it was something like, you know, loyal customer tax. There is actually a term similar to that in the banking industry inside, and it basically says that if you are locked into an existing home loan, you pay a higher rate than what they're offering to new customers. So one of my things here is that, you know, that is shocking customer experience in terms of customers that have been loyal to a business over a period of time and have paid that business money for a service or product are treated poorly, and new customers are treated much better. So the same goes for the beginning of the journey, that once, you know, the sale and the marketing, from my point of view as a marketer, doesn't finish when you've made the sale and the client has decided, yes, I'll buy your service or I'll buy your product. That's really just one step in the overall journey. And we really need to continue to wow them. So usually we try our best to wow them when they're making the purchase decision or before they're making the purchase decision. But we really need to be wowing them at every stage then. So once they've made the purchase decision, and from the time they then receive the product or the service, or if it's a training course, and actually get to use that, between when that starts and when they've made the purchase, there's a period of time that, you know, there's lots of opportunities to wow them and to keep that experience really positive.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a couple of things there to unpack from what you said. The banks having a loyalty tax, that's just absolutely abominable. And unfortunately, they're not the only ones. People like gyms do it exceptionally badly as well, is that the more loyal you are, the more you pay, which is very unfortunate. And they spend all their money and time trying to get new customers. What they don't realise is that you're the bread and butter, and you're actually keeping their business afloat and alive. And to keep you happy and not going to one of the others where they've been wooing you is far cheaper and far more profitable for their business. So that's the first thing. And then the other thing that you were saying about, yeah, the customer journey, that the purchase is sort of only very early on in the journey, and then, yeah, wowing them and keeping them loyal throughout the journey, and then possibly even being able to sell them something else along the way is a much better idea for your business than trying to get new clients all the time.
Yeah, well, that's right, because I think it's 6 or 7 times the cost to acquire new customers versus having existing customers buy something new. I'm not sure if that's the right number, but it's certainly significantly higher. And one of the reasons for that, of course, is you've built up trust and you've gone through the know-like trust factor with existing clients. And if they've had a fantastic experience with you, not only are they inclined to buy more from you, particularly if, you know, if there's something you have that will solve a problem that they have, they're more likely to buy from you than anybody else because they know that they're going to get this fantastic experience. They've lived through that experience with what they've bought already. And the second thing is they're likely to go and tell other people about it. And if, you know, if they tell other people about a fantastic experience to work with Kathy in marketing or in websites, then it's likely to generate new business as well. And it's much more likely to generate the right sort of new business because they're likely to be similar clients to the ones you're already working with. And if you're working with good clients, you'll attract more of those good clients.
Yes, definitely. If you're doing a great service, then your clients will then become advocates and they will be encouraging other people who have the same kind of problems they do to work with you. So that's always wonderful. And getting those similar clients will make it much easier for you in business as well.
Yeah, the one that I always love to have a conversation with, unfortunately, you usually end up with somebody at a call center with these conversations, but it's the telcos and the internet service providers. And every now and then they'll put out some special offer, discount for this plan or new plan at, the internet service providers will put out a new plan with faster speed or more downloads at the same price. And if I apply for that with my own service provider, they say, no, that's only for new customers. So I always love to have that conversation. As an existing customer, I have to pay more for a lower quality, and the lower cost, higher quality products only available to new customers. I say, well, I want to close my account and then open another one.
Yes, I definitely have been a recipient of that before. Yeah, I've decided to move to someone else because it was cheaper or better. And then they, particularly the telcos, come back and said, no, stay, we'll give you the same deal. Yeah. Yes, you should be offering me that before I decide I close.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And as somebody I was chatting to recently said, had gone through that same experience, and then after they finally got the offer of, okay, well, we'll do that for you as well, they then said, well, can we now talk about the last 12 months where I've been paying too much for my service?
Ah, very good. That's a nice comeback. And I've certainly had people come to me after I've actually made the decision to move and contracted the new company, coming back and saying, oh, we could have matched that. Yes, well, that wasn't what you said when we were discussing it. So, yes, we really do need to look after our loyal customers and not just be looking for the greener grass over the other side of the fence all the time.
Yeah. And, of course, the risk is with all this automation, firstly, that people do take shortcuts and forget about that human interaction. And I think that kind of tends to be more focused on acquiring new customers. But even with acquiring new customers, there's so much that can be done to personalize that experience, even through automation. For example, if I've already signed up for a newsletter, or if I've already downloaded the ebook, and then I continue to get emails from that business saying, download our ebook, that's a bad experience, because they're cluttering up my email with something that I've already downloaded and it's adding no extra value to me. So there's yes, so much that can be done to actually use the technology also to be a little bit more personal.
Absolutely. Whereas if they're sending you the second email saying, we see you've downloaded it, have you had a chance to read it yet?
Exactly.
Then that's a completely different experience.
That's right, yeah.
Perfect. So I guess the other way that automation can be not as good as it used, not as well as it could be, is when there's conflict. If there's an issue with a payment or something like that, and you get a stream of non-personal emails that have come out as opposed to a phone call to try and sort out what the issue is. You already got a bad taste in your mouth, and that can sometimes push you over the edge to then looking for a new provider. We just need to be very careful on our wording, because, of course, we don't have the face-to-face body language and all of that kind of thing. So careful on the wording and in what context we're actually using automation, so it adds to the experience as opposed to takes away from it.
That's right, yeah. And the other part of that is also having regular communication with clients, so that if the only communication clients get from you are invoices or when there's an issue with payment, and that's the only time they hear from you, that's not a real good experience either. Whereas if you're communicating with them constantly on an ongoing basis, explaining all the things that we're doing for you, explaining where we're at with the project, explaining what the next steps are, maybe even reaching out just to check in on how they're doing. And then every now and then there's the transactional ones that are invoices or maybe even a reminder about late payments. Then those don't stand out as being the only communication we get from that client or from that supplier.
No, that's so true, because you do see particular email topics come up and you go, well, I'm not going anywhere near that particular address because I know it's going to be a bill or a late reminder, whereas if it's sending you some value, you're more likely to open it, and that way they've also got a chance of actually seeing your invoice to be able to pay it.
That's right.
Okay, so we've talked about automation. What other things can we do to make our business and our marketing more human?
Well, I think one of the things that we work a lot with our clients is to get really clear on, you know, why we're in business, what we're doing, and what our vision is in the business, and what we do and for who we do it. So we do a lot of work around ideal client, and we take the ideal client exercise to a whole new level in terms of taking the traditional client persona and moving well beyond just the demographics and looking at a lot of the psychographics, but looking at them in a way that we figure out what are the beliefs and values and aspirations of your ideal client, and how are they likely to behave, and where might there be incongruencies between what their dreams and aspirations are and how they behave? Where are their real needs? And digging deeper into those real needs, what's behind those needs? Where are the gaps? And then looking at how can we help them, and what is the experience that we're going to deliver, and what's the transformation that we make or we help them make as a result of working with them? We go through that exercise in a great level of depth with our clients. And so being really clear on who that is, first of all, you kind of recognize those ideal clients when you're out and about networking and speaking to people, but also it gives you real clarity about the communications that you put out into the marketplace, whether it's a blog post that you're writing, whether it's advertising that you're doing, whether it's podcasting or video, the message is going to be consistent because you're always thinking, that's my ideal client, that's who I'm talking to, and you're really clear on what their aspirations are, what their needs are, what their beliefs are, values, and so on.
And that's perfect, because then you can tap into that, work out what their particular problem is and how you can solve it. I think people get really scared about narrowing their field down because they're worried that that's going to cut their piece of the pie. But of course, in actual fact, it increases their piece of the pie, because you read that copy or listen to the podcast or see them on video and go, yes, you're my kind of person. You're speaking to me. You understand my problem. You can help me. So therefore, there's no choice. You're definitely the one I need to speak to. Whereas when you're a more generalist, then you're thinking, oh, they might be able to help me. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I use the doctor analogy all the time. If you've just got a cold, you go to a doctor. But if you've got something serious, then you want to be referred to a specialist. But in business, we don't often use that thought process as well. And we're trying to be a generalist and capture everybody. Whereas, of course, the specialist is more targeted, but can also charge more, because then they're doing a specific task for you.
That's right. Well, I mean, you know, you can get down into the real niches and say, if you've got brain cancer, for example, you're not going to see a specialist or an orthopedic specialist, right? You'll go and see a neurosurgeon or a neurologist, because they're the ones that can help you with that problem. And that's very much the same here. And also turning it around, I mean, people, as you say, are afraid of missing out. You know, aren't we foregoing opportunities? And I say, well, yes, you are foregoing opportunities, but you're foregoing opportunities for people that maybe you're not in the best position to help them. Maybe, you know, they need more than what you have, or they need something different than what you have. So what it ends up being is not a good experience for the client that you bring on board if you're successful. Not necessarily a good experience for you either, because it's going to cost a lot more energy to service that client, because you're working outside your area of expertise a lot. And also, you know, the behaviors and the values might not be congruent with yours. And so there's going to be, at worst, even a bit of resentment coming through that. And it's going to take a lot of energy, and it's going to take your time away from working with somebody that actually is a really good match for you.
Yes, perfect. And those sort of people are never going to become your advocates either. So they're not going to be people who are going to be absolutely saying, love your work, tell everybody. And yes, it's just hard work for everybody. And then that's where people end up with businesses that they're not happy with and don't like.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's a two-edged sword. I mean, if they end up not becoming your advocates is probably a good thing, as long as they don't go out saying that it was such a bad experience and become the opposite of advocates. But if they were to become your advocates, then what's going to happen is you're going to attract more of those sort of clients that you're actually unhappy working with. So what you want is, you know, and that's why we like to call it the ideal client is, and we start with, because it is kind of a bit of an abstract exercise. So we say, well, who's your best client? Who do you love working with? Who would you get out of bed every day? And even if you knew you weren't going to get paid anything at all, who would you work with? Who would you actually go to a desert island with and spend all your time with, nobody else there but just the two of you? Who is that client? And then say, well, let's do a bit of an exercise on that client and let's see if we can clone that client.
Yes, and that's perfect. And obviously, when you're thinking about that client, if you've got that client in your mind's eye, then you can see their attributes, what they like to do, how they like to buy, and then you can form your wording and your messaging around that particular person that you have now named.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Excellent. So we've talked about automation, the right way and the wrong way. We've talked about making things more human and we've talked about getting to your ideal client. Is there anything else we should be looking at to make our marketing more human?
Well, I think I talked a little bit about the customer journey before, and I'm listening to a book at the moment, which is a really good book by Joey Coleman called Never Lose a Customer Again. And he talks about 7 stages of the customer journey. Our one, we've got actually 4 stages, but we've also got stages that are underneath that are actually unconscious stages. So our 4 stages are before, during, and then 2 after stages. And they're conscious in terms of what is the decision the potential client or the client is making in each of those stages. But there's also a whole lot of unconscious stuff going on. So I think really looking at what's driving people at a conscious level, what are their needs consciously, and also what are their unconscious needs, or, you know, ones that they don't express or perhaps even acknowledge or are consciously aware of, and how can you help meet those? So it sort of comes back to Tony Robbins' 5 core needs of human needs, and we kind of match that up to some of the unconscious stuff going on. So if we see something we like, and typically nearly everybody makes a kind of an emotional decision on it at some level and then uses a whole lot of other things to justify it. And the analysis part is all conscious of justifying it. You know, what's the return on investment going to be like? Is this the best product to address my need? Is this the best person to address my need? Is that service match? But the unconscious stuff really comes back to, do I like this person? You know, have they told me a good story? Do they make me feel good even before the purchase? And is there an emotional connection there? Mapping out that journey and being aware of all the things that you can do as a business to impact people and give them a good experience on that journey is, I think, a really powerful way to make things a lot more human as well. And, you know, having said that, of course, there's going to be stages in that journey where you qualify people out because, again, they're not the ideal client, and you would be doing yourself a disservice, but you'd also be doing them a disservice if you kind of were able to still convince them to buy your product or your service. So, you know, the best thing to do in those cases is to help them find a better alternative.
Absolutely. And that brings me to a case that I can think of. It was my very first client when I started my business some 18-ish years ago, and I had been a sales rep for a printing company previous to that, and I had heard about this lady within the sales office, and they were saying, don't go near her, she's hard work, she's terrible, she'll waste your time, don't go anywhere near her. And I'd been lucky enough to have a mutual friend of ours recommend me, and he was recommending me to other people as well. So I thought, well, I need to do the right thing and at least go and see her. To this day, 18 and a half years later, she's still a client and she's a wonderful friend. And what the difference was I gave her the time of day. She just wanted to sit and have a chat before we talked about business, whereas the other sales reps all thought they were on a time clock and they just wanted to get in and get out and disappear. Just by seeing how her customer journey went and how she liked to buy, by giving her an extra 10, 15 minutes later, the return on investment there has been incredible because, yes, she's still a customer after all this time. So sometimes it's just a case of looking at your customers, not treating everybody in the same box, and then going, okay, for that particular customer, I need to give them time. I've got another customer who works in a front office situation, so she never has any time. She just wants you to get in, tell her what you've got, whether it's by email, phone, or in person, and give her the service that she needs and get out. She doesn't want to have a chat for an hour because that's using her valuable time. So I think the customer journey sometimes can be slightly different for different customers, even though they're both your ideal customer, and you just need to be aware of that and humanize it for them.
That's right. And we're not all the same in terms of business. You know, we might do similar things to our competitors, but we're different in the way we work. We're different in the way we approach things. It's quite likely that different people will resonate with different businesses because of just who they are and how they work and how they turn up. I had an example recently of a woman that wanted some assistance with a website, and she was actually a client of somebody else I know. And she was really happy with them. The only thing was this business wasn't local to her, and she found it a bit challenging to describe the changes that she wanted made and the things she wanted implemented without kind of standing next to somebody and pointing on the screen or drawing things on a whiteboard. And the moment she had that, all of a sudden it became so much more easy for her to express her thoughts and her what she was wanting to achieve. And she ended up working with me on that because I was local.
That's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes it can just be a geographical thing that people want to actually have that face-to-face contact. Sometimes you can get over that with technology by using Skype or Zoom or any of those other video recording, but a lot of people don't like to be on video and certainly see themselves on video. So, yes, the personal contact in face-to-face is still a huge thing in our community. Okay, fabulous. Now we're getting close to the end of our time before we do our final five. So is there anything else you think that we should be telling our audience to look out for?
I guess one other thing that I haven't mentioned in terms of making marketing human is just creating a memorable and remarkable experience everywhere you can. And, you know, recognition, taking time to celebrate, little gifts and, you know, standing out in special ways and having something that Jay Baer in his book Talk Triggers has a lot of ideas and that are quite innovative and not very expensive things you can do. And it really is just taking the time to consider somebody else and creating that experience for them. So I think that's a good part of making marketing human again. And if you think of it, a lot of us work online, but if you think of going into a local store, maybe in a small country town where everybody knows everybody else and, you know, you don't just go in and do the transaction. They'll usually ask how the family is, and if been ill, they'll say, how are you doing? Have you recovered? If you've had a special event, they'll ask about that. It's all about actually caring about people as people in addition to what you're doing business with them.
Yes, perfect. And I do like talkable triggers. One that brings to mind is the lost bear. One of the kids left a bear in a hotel, and when they sent it back to them, they actually had a little passport about where the bear had been on his journey home. So I thought that was really clever. So not only did
a whole lot of Facebook posts with photos with guests, I think, by the pool and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, so not only did the bear come home, but the bear had a holiday, a vacation for our American audiences. Yeah, that was definitely something that was a talkable trigger. Perfect. Okay, so now we're up to our final five. So I ask all my guests five final questions. Are you game?
Yep, let's do it.
Okay. What is the best advice given to you by a mentor?
Well, I've had lots of advice and lots of it really good advice, but I guess when I was listening to some of your episodes, I thought, well, what's a standout for me? And one of the ones that was a standout recently was something that Brené Brown said on, I think it was on her Netflix special, and I've kind of adapted this, so I don't know exactly what it was she said. I think she was talking about parenting and being the parent that, or being the adult that we want our children to become. But I've adapted that a little bit more and said, what we are actually teaches more than what we teach, so that I have to be the success that I want my clients to become.
Perfect. And we do learn by experience as opposed to learning by words in most occasions.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the biggest help you've received since starting your business?
Oh, that's tough. I've had lots of help in starting the business. I guess having mentors and having a business coach has been a big one for me. And one of, I guess, the standout at the moment, we're on a podcast here. I run my own podcast as well and have been doing so for quite some time. And that kind of changed my whole business. We were getting heavily involved in podcasting, and that was something one of my mentors, and you'll know who that is, that's Troy Dean, who we both know, suggested to me many years ago, and I got started and have been podcasting ever since. So I think that was probably one of the big bits of advice that's made a big difference for my business.
Fabulous. And Troy Dean is from WP Elevation, and that's how I actually met Jürgen, yeah, quite a few years ago. So once again, humanizing the experience and the community. So wonderful. Okay, what is the one thing that you have to do every day, your non-negotiable?
For me, it's getting out for an early morning bike ride. Although the last winter I've been a little bit casual about it. I often find myself saying, well, it's a bit cold and it's nice and warm in bed, so I stay in bed. But now that spring's sprung, I'm back on doing that every day when I can.
Excellent. I certainly know that getting up early to exercise is quite difficult when it's chilly, so I totally understand that. Okay, what is your favourite business book and why?
I've read quite a lot recently, and a couple, well, first of all, the one that I remember for a long time is Marcus Sheridan's They Ask, We Answer, which is the story of how he saved a swimming pool company during the great financial crisis by regularly blogging about it. And when I say regularly, it was daily blog posts that he published and basically answered all the clients' questions, like how expensive is a swimming pool and all the questions people have around different swimming pools. And that philosophy, I think, is really valuable in a content marketing sense. So that's a really good one. A couple that I've read recently have been by Mike Michalowicz called The Pumpkin Plan and Clockwork. And The Pumpkin Plan is kind of consistent with the message we've been talking about today about niching down, being really clear on what your area of expertise is and where you can make the most difference in business, and then working with the clients that are a good match for you, but then scaling that up in a way that it's sustainable for the long term. And Clockwork kind of continues that theme, but goes on to productivity themes, but it talks a lot about what's the founder's role in the business. It talks about the queen bee role. So the queen bee in a colony of bees has just one role, and that's to procreate the species. And all the other bees have different roles that they fulfill, but there's just the one queen bee. So it's kind of like in business. Anytime you're feeling overwhelmed or doing too much, the question to ask is, am I fulfilling my queen bee role right at this moment?
And I like the way that Mike separates the queen bee from the queen bee person as well. The role is separate to the person doing it. So sometimes it's a case of then you're the queen bee role, but you need to step out of that and almost become above it so that you can actually get the person that does that role best. And sometimes it's not always the business owner, so it's sometimes to let the baby go just a bit and become more management as opposed to hands-on. So that is wonderful. Okay, and our very final one is, what do you wish you had known when you started out?
That's a difficult one because I wish I'd known everything that I know now when I started out. But really, I mean, to me, going into small business and entrepreneurship, obviously I came in with a fair bit of experience from the corporate world and had lots of things that I thought I knew and could offer. Well, I did know I knew, but I thought I could offer in the small business world. And so there were a lot of learnings around what was a good fit in the small business world and what was not. But the whole journey of entrepreneurship has been, you know, I learn something every day. I guess on the one hand, I wish I would have known a lot of what I know now back when I started. But at the same time, I really enjoy continuing to learn. So it's been fun and continues to be.
Fabulous. And definitely podcasting is a huge learning curve for me. So, yes, learning something new every day and getting to speak to all sorts of people all over the world and having all sorts of people all over the world listen to us. So that's just an incredible journey. Well, thank you very much, Jürgen. We really appreciate your time and your wisdom.
Thanks,
and
Kathy.
If people would like to know more about you, how can they contact you?
Our website is innovabiz.com.au. So that's INNOVABIZ, innovation and business. And we've also got a free marketing mastery mini course at innovabiz.co/marketing master. And if you go there, you'll see a small sample of the ideal client exercise that I mentioned earlier.
Wonderful. And we'll drop all of those in the show notes for people to get. So thank you very much and I appreciate your time, Jürgen.
Thanks, Kathy.
Don't forget to subscribe to Small Business Talk podcast and head on over to smallbusinesstalk.com.au/downloads for all the show notes and links to this episode. Remember, to be great, you must start. Pick one tip from today's episode, take action and implement it. Let's meet again next week at the same time and place. Until then, take action. And SBT community, enjoy your journey.